This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we're going to talk about the Israeli-Palestinian crisis with two journalists, one Israeli, the other a Jordanian of Palestinian origin. Each is in favor of the peace process. Later in the program, we'll hear from Rami Khoury, who writes the syndicated political column A View from the Arab World. My first guest, Danny Rubenstein, is a political columnist who's on the editorial board of the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. He's covered the West Bank and Gaza for the paper and is the author of the book The Mystery of Arafat. Early this morning, we phoned Rubenstein in Jerusalem, where he lives. Yesterday, President Clinton announced that Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak and the Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat had agreed to a truce at the emergency meeting in Egypt at Sharm el-Sheikh. But violence continued today in the streets of the West Bank and Gaza, leading many people to wonder if Arafat still has the power to influence behavior on the street level. Do you think that Arafat has lost influence among the Palestinian people precisely because he's part of the peace process?
Yes, Arafat lost a lot of his influence because the peace process didn't reach the goal that he promised to his people. He promised to his people about 7 years ago that they will get a Palestinian state, that the economic situation will be much better. He almost promised them paradise, and he didn't fulfill today's situation that we didn't reach any peace agreement. Still, the Palestinian territories are in bad shape from economic point of view. There is no Palestinian state. There is a lot of limits, a lot of restrictions on the Palestinians themselves. They don't have the freedom of movement from one place to another. The Palestinian and of course the regime, the administration that Arafat created in the territories is not is not the best one in the world, to say the least.
What do you mean by that, about his regime in the territories?
In that the Arafat administration is quite there's a lot of corruption, nepotism. They accuse the leaders that they steal from the people. They accuse the leaders that they don't have a proper system in their administration. And sometimes they even call it a regime of gangsters, of the mafia, that they use all the connection that only few people benefit from the peace process and become rich, and the most of the people stay in the bad condition that they had before.
Danny Rubenstein, in 1998, you wrote this, more than once it has struck me that all these years I've been writing what is essentially the same article. There is always something about a crisis in the diplomatic process. There is the threat of a renewed outbreak of violence and a steady stream of the same words, terror, settlements, refugees, rights. How many times can I write that the Oslo peace process is dying and that the diplomatic impasse is very dangerous? You say you've been writing this over and over and over again, and it's always the same story. What's been happening in the past few weeks in Israel and the territories, do you see this as a continuation of the same story, or is something different, something more dramatic, more dangerous, more risky?
It's more or less the same, but it's not only that from the time that I started to write my stories. It started years back. From the, let's say, almost 100 years of the conflict here. The problem of the conflict here is that it's the conflict between two communities. It's not a conflict between two states. When you have a conflict between two states, it's a problem of the border. You have to move the border a few meters or kilometers or miles here and there. Here you have a situation in which the conflict is between, it's not between Jerusalem and Damascus, let's say, or between Jerusalem and Cairo. It's a problem between Jerusalem and Jerusalem. In such conflict that you have in many other areas in the world, like in Northern Ireland or in Lebanon or in Cyprus or in former Yugoslavia, that you have in the same country, you have two or more communities. And this nature of dispute is much more, I would say, much more cruel. People use a lot of symbols, and the problem is that you cannot make a total disengagement between the two communities. That's the main problem here.
You have been covering West Bank and Gaza for an Israeli newspaper. So you're familiar with what's happening in the territories, and you're familiar with what's happening in Israel. Do you feel like you see things on each side that you think the other side doesn't understand?
Yeah, that's we sometimes it's like a talk between two people who are deaf, because the people don't listen to each other. People see everything differently, and people use different language sometimes. The problem is not that they don't understand each other. They don't want to understand each other. They don't want to listen to each other. That's the main issue here. You know, there were many atrocities in this crisis here. Everybody complained that the atrocities were shown on TV more of the atrocities that against his position. It was shown more by the CNN. And as a matter of fact, it was the same. You know, I'm talking about picture of the photograph of the child in Gaza, in the hand of his father, dying in the hand of his father, and the picture of the lynch in Ramallah. Both sides complained that the CNN and the other international media show those pictures too much. You know, so it's not they simply cannot see the other side.
One of the Palestinian justifications for the current intifada is that the Israelis have been using disproportionate force. And I'm wondering, from the Israeli point of view, how the use of guns and tanks in Gaza and the West Bank is seen. What do the Israelis have to say about the amount of force being used?
I would agree with the Palestinian claim only the beginning, or the first day. On the first day of the clashes, I think that the Jerusalem police overused the force in the Temple Mount. That's what really was the match that put the fire on here. It was, seven people who died in the Temple Mount was a real factor that put this fire, but later the Israelis didn't have any other option. We are talking about small Israeli settlements in the area of Gaza or in the West Bank that were attacked by hundreds or thousands of demonstrators, and if the Israelis would not react with these heavy arms, they would be dead like the lynch that you've seen in Ramallah.
Are there things, as a journalist, that you most want to explain to Israelis about what life is like for Palestinians in the territories, and things that you'd like Palestinians to understand about Israelis?
What I try to explain to my reader is, for instance, the relationship towards land. For them, for the Palestinians, for the Arabs, land have a different meaning that is for us, because it's an agrarian society. Many of them used to be peasants in the past. Many of them are still peasants and have a deep relation to the land. We don't understand it. For us, we are an urban society. Many of us live in towns, and it's more Western social structure. So we don't have the same attitude towards land that they have. On their side, it's totally different. For them, they don't understand why we came back to this land after 2,000 years, and they would say, "You have land, and you have your roots in Europe or in some other place, so you can go back to the place that you were born. That you have, if you have any connection to the land, it should be in Europe, in other places. You speak a different language. You are not belong to this area, and so on."
You know a lot of people in the Israeli peace movement, and I'm wondering if you think that people within the peace movement have been affected, if their opinions about peace, if their opinions about negotiating with Arafat and with Palestinians has been changed by the current crisis.
Yeah. Unfortunately, some of them changed their attitude or changed their view. about it. I don't justify it. I don't see any. You know, that the problem is not really the problem. The way I see it, it's also that we didn't do the right thing in the past. We didn't dismantle even one settlement since the Oslo Agreement. We were...
You're talking about the Israeli settlements the territories.
Yeah. We didn't dismantle even one settlement. We kept those settlements, you know, in the middle of Hebron, in the middle of Gaza. And we, according to our plan, to this government plan, we were ready to dismantle them and to pull back from many. So why didn't we do it in the past? That's really, I don't understand. You know that the problem is that really what make me, with really depress me, is that today we have the most dovish, the most flexible Israeli government. And in the Arab camp, you have in the Palestinian camp, you have the most, I would say, practical and flexible regime, which is Arafat, compared to the Hamas. It's all relative here. So if those both sides couldn't reach an agreement, and they couldn't reach an agreement in Camp David, the crisis came because, I think that this is the basis of the crisis, is because we discover on both sides that the most flexible position cannot meet together. We cannot agree. The minimum that we, the maximum that we offer, didn't meet the minimum of the Palestinian demands.
So it sounds like you really think the peace process is over for now.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say that that's not only my crystal ball, but it's many of us here that for the time being, it's over.
Well, what would that mean? I mean, what would life be like in Gaza and the West Bank and in Israel if the peace process is temporarily over?
There'll be some temporary agreement how to manage the crisis, how to prevent explosions, and how to let the Palestinian Authority going in its way, you know, and governing the Palestinian territories. And with some kind of disengagement of separatism of between both communities. That's the only option that I see now. We need time till the wounds will be somehow recovered. But the wound is very, very deep now, and the mood on both sides is terrible.
Danny Rubenstein is a political columnist who's on the editorial board of the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. He lives in Jerusalem. Later in the program, we'll hear from Rami Kouri, who writes the syndicated political column A View from the Arab World. This is Fresh Air. When we cover issues on Fresh Air, our goal isn't to find guests who will fight with each other. A shouting match can be very dramatic, but it doesn't necessarily clarify the issues. Our ambition is to present thoughtful, reflective conversations in the hope of providing context for the story and clarifying different points of view. That emphasis on clarity and context is what you've come to expect from public radio. So during this fundraiser, in fact, during this break, please call with your financial support. Thank you. Let's get back to the interview we recorded early this morning with Danny Rubenstein, a political columnist and a member of the editorial board of the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. You live in Jerusalem, and in Jerusalem there are Jews and Palestinians in close proximity. Tell me a little bit how life has changed in the past few weeks since this new uprising, how life has changed in Jerusalem.
What really was changed is that we don't, you know, we live in a separate quarters, so we don't enter. Arabs don't come, or they come very rarely to the Jewish quarters. Jews are not going at all to the Arab neighborhoods. And the residential area is really totally separated. What was changed in my life, for instance, when I have to go to some place which is in East Jerusalem and I have to cross an Arab neighborhood, I will prefer to do some kind of a bypass and not to cross, and not to go through, I'm talking about driving through an Arab neighborhood. If I'm walking, it's less dangerous. But But if I'm driving, everybody can identify me because of many reasons, and they can throw rocks and so on the vehicle. So I changed, for instance, my habits of moving from one place to another. And that's one of the... I don't enter some of the Arab places that I used to go to because I feel that the people there are... I don't know if they are hostile. They're not hostile, but they treat me in a different way. They're not so polite, and so they don't welcome me the way that they used to.
Getting back to the Israeli peace movement, what exactly do you think has changed within it? What kinds of changes of heart, if any, are you seeing within the peace movement?
The change in the peace movement is about the nature of the Arab people and the Palestinians. Those who saw the lynching in Ramallah, that was a shock, a real shock about many of Israelis, because there was dancing in the street there, and people looked happy, and the police officers didn't do anything. So Israelis, the peaceful ones, say, look with whom we are dealing, look who are our partners. And I have to admit that those pictures were such a shock for many of us, because I and many of us visited Ramallah many times. We know this place, we know this downtown Ramallah, we know this police station. And to be inside the police station, and that how the mob, how the mob penetrates the area, and the police doesn't do anything, that's really shocked many of us. And it creates, they say, look with whom we are. Look what kind of people we are dealing with.
Was that the reaction you had too?
No, because I know that there are several cases in which the mob control the street. And it happens all over the world. I'm sorry to say that it happened from time to time also here in Israel. It doesn't reach this extent. Nobody can penetrate, a police station here and do this. But to kill in the street, it happened here and there, also among Israelis. But this kind of incident that happened in Ramallah, I don't believe that it could happen in Israel.
You're on the editorial board of the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. Could you talk a little bit about what editorial meetings have been like in figuring out what the editorial position will be on the current conflict?
We consider a liberal newspaper. And our position is mainly, I would say, flexible towards the Arabs. We even wrote an editorial that Israel should give away the mosque, the Temple Mount, to the Palestinians, to the Islamic, and we can live without it. There is a lot of criticism against us now. Against the left, because they say, you see, we adopt your position. In the editorial board of Haaretz, I would say that more or less, we don't agree, but most of the people have the same position, have a liberal position. The problem is in the street. We will call the street. Among the we got a lot of letters to the editor, both sides, complaining that we were too flexible, that we were too dovish, too moderate, and look what is the Arab response to it, the Palestinian response to it. And we got also other letters from the ultra-left who blamed the Israelis and said, you see, this is the Israelis didn't agree, didn't understand the Palestinian position, didn't want to listen to the Palestinian position. Continuing, the Israelis continue the occupation all the time, and that's the result of it. So it is a real, gap between the two views.
In its early years, Israel saw itself as a kind of David against the Goliath of the Arab nations. Israel built a very strong military, and now Israel controls the occupied territories. Israel has been using armed force again within the territories and is seen as more of the Goliath rather than the David. What do you think this is doing to the self-image of Israelis?
Well, I'm not so sure that it's true, because the image is something, but there is also some real reality here. In the reality, we are still a small state stuck in the Middle East. As Prime Minister Barak used to say, we are a villa in the jungle, which means that we are really different from this area. We are foreigners here. And from economic and social point of view, we are in the middle of Europe. We are not in the Middle East. The average income in Israel is 10 times more than in among the Palestinians, in the Palestinian society, and about 20 times more than in Egypt. So we are really in some situation that is still we have a problem here. We are still a very tiny, small minority here, 5 million Jews in the ocean of hundred and fifty million Arabs. So we are still in the same position. It didn't change.
Danny Rubenstein is a political columnist and a member of the editorial board of the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. Coming up, we'll hear from Rami Khoury, who writes a syndicated political column called A View from the Arab World. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.